This talk was given by Suzanne Taikyo-Gilman at Zen Mountain Monastery. Taikyo is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order and currently serves as the Assistant Training Coordinator. All of our talks are offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, everybody. And good afternoon or morning, evening to all you who can't be here but are joining us on one continuous thread. I'm Taikyo, one of the senior monastics here at the monastery. And Shugen Roshi asked me to give a talk today in session. This is from Shanti Deva. May bodhicitta, precious and sublime, arise where it has not yet come to be. And where it has arisen, may it never fail, but grow and flourish ever more and more. Bodhicitta is a word that I got very curious about early on. Bodhi means our enlightened essence, and citta means heart or mind. And it's translated as the heart of enlightened mind. And the teaching of bodhicitta is the compassionate wish to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. And it is an important part of the bodhisattva path, the being of bodhi. So there are two aspects that make up bodhicitta. They arise together. One is kind of the relative, the phenomenal, and the other is the absolute basis. These two really work together. So Pema Chodron talks about the arising of bodhicitta as like a parting of the clouds, and she was, quote, Shanti Deva, as when a flash of lightning rends the night and in its glare shows all the dark black clouds had hid. Likewise, rarely, through the Buddha's power, virtuous thoughts arise, brief and transient in the world. Thus, behold the other frailty of goodness. Except for perfect bodhicitta, there is nothing able to withstand the great and overwhelming strength of evil. And in that sense, evil coming from our self-centeredness and all the trouble that creates. She says, although it's transient and weak, without this initial or ongoing flash, we'd never be inspired to investigate this path. And while we may wonder how bodhicitta has this much power to part the clouds of darkness, she says, it lifts us out of our self-centeredness, gives us a chance to leave dysfunctional habits behind. Moreover, everything we encounter becomes an opportunity to develop the outrageous courage of a bodhi heart. And it is outrageous, in a way, to think that me can do anything about the troubles of the world, and yet that's what we do. That's what a bodhisattva does. And we recognize something really true, I think, in bodhicitta, in that that possibility, when we see the clouds part for a moment and see possibility. When we hear the Buddha's teachings on the Four Noble Truths, suffering, the cause of suffering, relief from suffering, and the path, we recognize something. Shugen Roshi mentioned this on Wednesday in his talk, that these teachings were taken up by the Buddha in many different ways throughout all his teaching career. And I think that's kind of fundamental to our practice. So, early when I was a student of Daito Roshi, my first teacher, brand new student, like, I don't even know if I'd actually become a student yet, but he was down in the city leading a Zazen Kai before the temple in Brooklyn came into being. I think we were in an office building someplace. And I remember going into Doksan with him, and I don't remember what I was complaining about, but I used to do a lot of activism work, and he said, life suffers. And it just, like, something in me just, like, jumped. And I said, that's not all. That's not all there is. In my desperation, I think, to know that. And yet that's not all there is. It's part of a whole. And Shantideva, again, on Raising Bodhicitta, puts out these words of joy, celebration, bliss, delight, and joy. So I'm just going to read a couple of those. With joy, I celebrate the virtue that relieves all beings from the sorrows of the states of loss and places those who languish in the realms of bliss. And I rejoice in virtue that creates the cause of gaining the enlightened state and celebrate the freedom won by living beings from the round of pain. The intention, ocean of great good that seeks to place all beings in the state of bliss and every action for the benefit of all, such is my delight and all my joy. I join my hands and pray to Buddhas who reside in every quarter, kindle now the Dharma's light for those who grope bewildered in the dark of suffering. That's us. And yet this intention, the ocean of great good, we cultivate that in practice. Relative bodhicitta entails the compassionate wish to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all living beings and to train in the methods to achieve that aim. So some of these practices we do to cultivate compassion, like metta, loving kindness. Start with yourself, always. How are you feeling about yourself? Can you generate some love? Can you feel that heart? And then share it with the room, love the room. Love and arising, what's arising in your mind, even if you don't like it. Or you could just start with your annoyedness with the room, your irritation. Something arises and you just want to destroy it, you know, like boom, boom, boom. So we have a choice. It's all energy that we're working with. So use it, you know, in zazen, see the thought, recognize it. Just see it, give it space. It's said this relative bodhicitta is like the wish to go on a journey and actually setting out. So there's the wish, there's that intention, and then there's actually the things that we do. The activity, like the four immeasurables, which we chant, and then there's actually taking it out, really working on yourself, really working on the six perfections, working the path. And Judy Leaf, a Tibetan teacher, teaches the Lojong practice specifically for the cultivation of bodhicitta and compassion. She said, doing good deeds is fundamental. The path of bodhisattva warrior is not just about talk, but about action. It's important to cultivate virtue, but it's not sufficient. Our attempts at virtue can become heavy-handed and distorted. We can go so far as to use the activity of kindness as a method of self-aggrandizement in the disguise of helping others. Even when our attempts at kindness are not distorted, trying to do the right thing can be wearing. It can be a struggle. We can kind of burn ourselves out. And so she points out that underlying all of this, all of these practices, is the ground of absolute bodhicitta, and this is what makes all the difference in not spinning out. For with this grounded or non-ground, the basis for distorted kindness is removed, or at least lessened. Instead of struggling to be kind, we find that the true acts of kindness are without struggle. So resting in our zazen, that's a practice. Dogen refers also to bodhicitta as creating beneficial conditions for others. I want to read this quote too. "It is not without cause that minds and all things, self and other, come together. Therefore, at the moment you arouse the aspiration for enlightenment, myriad things become conditions that increase this aspiration. At each moment, all aspirations for enlightenment and attainments of the way are born and perish. If they were not born and did not perish at each moment, the unwholesome actions of the past moments would not go away. If the unwholesome actions in the past moment did not go away, wholesome actions in their future moments would not manifest at this moment." So we have to keep practicing because everything shifts. And clearing the way, clearing the mind, allows the next moment to arise, always. And the practice of Zazen, it lands us directly in this aspect of what's called absolute bodhicitta. One definition I saw says, absolute bodhicitta is the direct insight into the absolute nature of things. And that absolute nature is groundless. There's no substantial thingness to what's arising. And we get that opportunity in Zazen to really turn in, and to keep turning in, to see what's arising, see a thought, make space, investigate, be curious. But most important, just don't turn away from yourself. All things change, but we have to be present to be aware that it's happening. All those irritations, the story, the loops that we get caught in, it's all going to change. But when we start adding things to it, and the story gets longer, the feelings come up, It gets harder. So be present. A Tibetan teacher called Longchenpa says, "It is said through the stainless strength of one's own mind and the compassion of the sovereign of love and wisdom, all will be according to one's wish." That wish to become enlightened for the benefit of all beings. And that all beings will be enlightened. So there's a skillfulness to this raising of bodhicitta as a practice. Longchenpa also talked about making offerings. In fact, went on and on for pages. I think Shantideva also, there's like a very important practice of making offerings to all Buddhas, all beings throughout space and time, and in very elaborate ways. From what I've read, it seems to be part of the Mahayana practice to really make offerings and to praise. And when we're offering things to others, it's very likely we start to see our kind of small wishes in perspective, you know, that there are great beings, that there are great acts, that that we wouldn't be where we are without the ancestors of the past and all that they offered us. And we have to acknowledge, where does this all come from? You know, where does this clarity of the Buddha's teachings come from? It's the awakened mind, and so we lift that up. And when we sit down to practice in Zazen, it's like we're making an offering. You know, you bow to your seat, and you bow to the room. You sit down in the posture of the Buddha. You know, you turn in. And as Judy Leaf mentioned, this absolute bodhicitta is essential for nourishing us, for nourishing all the activity that we are bringing about, and to ensure that we don't deplete ourselves in the process. And this bodhicitta prayer, "May bodhicitta, precious and sublime, arise where it has not yet come to be." I use this a lot during our election cycles. I found it a helpful way to just sort of go directly to, you know, what I hold so dear and what I am so distraught about at times and wondering, how do I bring these together? May bodhicitta, precious and sublime, arise where it has not yet come to be. And where it has arisen, may it never fail, but grow and flourish more and more. A teacher named Dzigar Khongtro Rinpoche wrote, "The purity of the wish to obtain enlightenment depends on two things: to what degree we've gotten rid of self-centeredness, and to what degree we were able to generate loving kindness and compassion for others." The wish to be enlightened for the benefit of all mother sentient beings changes over time. It's not the wish itself that changes, but the quality of the wish changes tremendously. In the beginning, the wish is not that authentic. It's feeble and relatively easily destroyed by unfavorable circumstances. By continuously practicing that wish over time, selfishness is brought to the surface and exhausted through the power of the training. The wish becomes more authentic and genuine as loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy become very real and instinctive. Yeah, I just want to share one thing. I kind of went down the rabbit hole, you know, in exploring bodhicitta in Rigpa Wiki, which is an online resource, quite rich. And I found a teaching by, it's credited to Maitreya, the Buddha of the future, but recorded by, I believe, a Sangha. And it's called 22 Similes for Bodhicitta. And there are 22, but I'm just going to mention a few. The earth as a support for all virtuous intentions. Fire, which burns away the kindling of obstructions. The great ocean, in which we remain unperturbed by unwelcome events. And the most majestic of mountains in Zazen Samadhi. So think of that when you go back to your seat. Here, you are the majestic mountain, the most majestic of mountains. So I'm going to end with this quote from Dogen. And I think he's talking about the integration of this relative and absolute aspect of bodhicitta in the aspiration for enlightenment. When you turn the four great elements and the five skandhas, and practice sincerely, you attain the way. When you turn grass, trees, tiles, and walls, and practice sincerely, you attain the way. It is so because the four great elements and the five skandhas, as well as grass, trees, tiles, and walls, practice together with you. They have the same nature, the same mind and life, the same body and capacity as you. This being so, many of those who come from the assembly of Buddha ancestors endeavor in the way of taking up grass and having the heart of trees. This is how it is with arousing the aspiration for enlightenment.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.